From the KTOO newsroom in Juneau, I'm Jennifer Pemberton. Alaska is proposing to get rid of tuberculosis screenings in schools. Critics question the plan since Alaska regularly tops the list of states with the most cases of the disease. But as Claire Strempel reports for KTOO, the state health department says the school screening program hasn't turned up a single case in years.
In early November, the state posted a proposal to end universal tuberculosis screening in schools. The plan generated blowback online after Scott Kendall, an outspoken critic of Governor Mike Dunleavy's administration, tweeted about it. His tweet included the fact that Alaska has the highest rate of TB in the nation. Kendall's tweet is true, but there's more to the story. The state considered axing the program as early as 2016, during the Walker administration. State data said other methods of fighting the disease are more effective. As early as 2013, the state stopped requiring universal screening at schools in low-risk areas for TB. And in 2019, the state suspended the program statewide. Now, the state is seeking to take the program off the books altogether and make that suspension permanent. The state's health department refused an interview, but state epidemiologist Dr. Michelle Rothoff answered some questions via email. She wrote that between 2014 and 2019, the state didn't find any cases of TB in school screening, even though it tested more than 10,000 students per year. State data from 2019 shows that cases of TB in kids under 14 accounted for less than 15% of cases statewide. There were 58 cases of tuberculosis recorded in Alaska last year, according to Dr. Rothoff's email. She did not say how many of those cases were among children. Alaskans can still comment on the proposal. The deadline is December 27, 2021. In Juneau, I'm Claire Strempel.
On Tuesday, the Biden administration formally began the process of restoring roadless protections to millions of acres of Southeast Alaska's federal forest lands. It opens up a 60-day comment period to undo action taken by the Trump administration that critics say could lead to more old-growth logging in the Tongass National Forest. Coast Alaska's Jacob Resnick reports.
A notice in the Federal Register published Tuesday says Southeast Alaska's timber industry is shrinking. Tongass National Forest-related logging and sawmilling sectors fell from just shy of 200 jobs in the early 2000s to around 60 workers in 2018. The U.S. Department of Agriculture argues restoring the 2001 roadless rule reflects the Biden administration's priorities to build on the region's tourism and fishing sectors. The U.S. Forest Service has already frozen old-growth timber sales under the current administration. Trout Unlimited's Austin Williams says Alaska Governor Bill Walker's 2018 petition to exempt the Tongass National Forest from roadless protections put too much emphasis on commercial logging.
You know, it's really time that we just move past that and we recognize that there's more value on the forest, keeping it and conserving it so that we can have fish and wildlife, so that we can have tourism, so that we can have cultural and traditional uses, and to help fight climate change.
The roadless rule would apply to about 9 million acres of the Tongass. But in practical terms, it could protect at most about 168,000 acres of old-growth forest from clear-cut. Governor Mike Dunleavy and Alaska's congressional delegation strongly supported the Trump administration's exemption of roadless. Randy Rurow, the governor's chief of staff, recently said bringing back the rule is part of a larger pattern of federal overreach.
And we think that discretion for the forest to be managed should continue to be at the local level. We don't need Washington, D.C. with a one-size-fits-all rule for every forest in the nation.
A lawsuit by the state to block the Biden administration's moves to bring back roadless on the Tongass was dismissed last week by a federal appeals court. And a separate lawsuit by a coalition of tribes and ecological groups in favor of roadless protections remains pending, but could be rendered moot by the new change in direction. Tuesday's action opens up a 2-month comment period required to bring back roadless, but even if that eventually happens, barring an act of Congress, it could be reversed again by a future administration. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Jacob Resnick.
Juneau officials have put a lot of time and effort into studying what it would take to let cruise ships plug into the local electric grid while they're docked in town. That way, the ships wouldn't have to burn fossil fuels all day in the harbor to keep their lights on. One privately owned dock was electrified 20 years ago. City officials think it'll cost $25 million to electrify the two city-owned ones. Eric Schall is an engineer for Juneau Docks and Harbors. He helped put together a 55-page federal grant application for the project this summer. But on Friday, he found out that they didn't make the cut.
Disappointed. Glad to see that so many of our Southeast neighbors were successful.
The Department of Transportation did announce grants for similarly priced marine infrastructure projects in Cordova and Haines.
I kind of just walked away in those three comparisons that the U.S. Department of Transportation chose to replace aging, failing infrastructure over improving new infrastructure, if you will.
Still, Shaw thinks Juneau's docks will be electrified eventually.
The value is pretty obvious in what it does for emissions. And, you know, we have a very robust understanding of the fleet. And we know that worldwide fleets are going more electrical.
The idea of assigning value to reduced greenhouse gas emissions is more than conceptual. For ranking purposes, the grant rules let communities calculate a dollar value for greenhouse gases that a project would offset. Shaw says that helped this project score well, and it could be applied to other infrastructure grant opportunities to come. A Juneau resident has started a new clothing drive to help people experiencing homelessness. Alexis Ross Miller recently read a story in the paper about a woman named Laura Roram about her daughter's experience with homelessness.
I, you know, was just motivated by Laura's words as a mother, and it was just, you know, so sad to me that her daughter is not just one unique individual. There's millions of stories like that.
So Miller started making calls to shelter providers around town to organize a clothing drive. It's the first clothing drive she's ever organized. The Glory Hall, St. Vincent's de Paul, and the Resurrection Lutheran Church are all participating. Miller is hoping to hold the clothing drive through December 15th.
But, you know, I tell people, well, you can donate all year long.
Winter items that the shelters need include coats, hats, snowsuits, scarves, and gloves. Before donating, Miller asks people to wash or dry clean any items if possible. People can bring winter items to the Glory Hall, located at 8715 Teal Street behind Nugget Mall, or St. Vincent de Paul next door, or to the Resurrection Lutheran Church, located at 740 West 10th Street, close to the federal building. A Delta Junction man has pleaded not guilty to federal charges of threatening to kill Alaska's two U.S. senators. KUAC's Tim Ellis reports.
J. Allen Johnson's lawyer entered his client's not guilty plea during Monday's telephonic arraignment. And attorney Jason Weiner also said he's asked the federal prosecutor to consider a plea deal. Weiner says prosecutor Ryan Tansey told him he couldn't offer a deal right now because he needs to do some further consultation. Weiner told Johnson that he wants to see what kind of deal the prosecution may come up with over the next 45 days while both sides prepare their cases for trial. Weiner didn't return phone calls and emails today asking for further comment. Also during Monday's arraignment, U.S. Magistrate Judge Scott Oravec ran aloud six counts against Johnson that a grand jury handed down last week. They include two counts of threatening to assault and murder a federal official. In this case, Senators Lisa Murkowski and Dan Sullivan, with intent to intimidate or impede the senators from carrying out their official duties and to retaliate against them for doing those duties. Johnson's also accused of threatening to destroy or damage property owned by Murkowski and using a telephone to make those threats. Tansey, the prosecutor, told the court that Johnson could, if convicted, be sentenced to a total of up to 50 years in prison and up to $1.5 million in fines. He'd also have to forfeit seven firearms that FBI agents confiscated last month during a raid on his home in Delta Junction. The guns were seized because Johnson's a felon who was convicted 5 years ago of drunken driving after more than two previous DUI convictions, and he wasn't allowed to own or have access to guns. Oravec told Johnson that he'll continue to be held at Fairbanks Correctional Center, where he's been jailed since FBI agents arrested him on October 4th after investigators determined he'd left a total of 17 threatening messages on the two senators' voicemail accounts. The judge also told Johnson that barring a plea deal, the case will go to trial, though it's not yet been scheduled. When and if it is, he says a new judge will be presiding. That's Judge Ralph Beislein, a senior U.S. District Judge for Alaska. In Delta Junction, I'm Tim Ellis.
There's a winter weather advisory in effect for Juneau until noon tomorrow. We should get 3 to 5 inches of snow before midday tomorrow, when that snow could turn to rain. Tonight, snow showers are expected with 1 to 3 inches possible and a low of 32. Tomorrow, snow, then rain with a high of 40. Thanksgiving is looking like it's going to be rainy, too, with a high of 41. It's a good day to stay indoors with the oven going, I guess. Currently overcast with light snow at Juneau International Airport, 35 degrees. This is KTOO News. I'm Jennifer Pemberton.